One of the unique parts of it was a again, first time ever, that we needed some way of stopping the thing spinning, because that's not a good if you're trying to listen to the satellite as the it spins and the signals go in and out. So Steve, and I'm going to claim some responsibility also, I think, came up with a system which he's going to describe. Now, this is a bit dramatic, isn't it? Here's a satellite.
Well, for a start, why did we include any attitude stabilisation system at all? Satellites with a serious purpose must have some kind of facility to maintain the orientation of antennas for communication, sensors, telescopes looking at stars and so on. We were doing nothing of the kind. Paradoxically, it was the simplicity of the system that demanded the attitude stabilisation. The telemetry system that Owen mentioned was designed for amateur radio operators. So it was indicating temperatures, battery voltage and current, was sending signals from the horizon sensors. So as the satellite was spinning around, it just indicated dark sky, bright earth and anything in between, just via, literally, a basic form of music. So for the amateur operators who couldn't be expected to have any specifically designed equipment to detect more complex encoded signals, it was just simple audible tones, and the musical pitch indicated the value of each item. So there was a 6.5 second burst for each value. There were 8 altogether stepping through. So with the variation, particularly in the horizon sensors, the thing spinning around randomly, so the signals from the horizon sensors were all over the place. These antennas, pretty crude, but still have directional characteristics. So if you happen to be underneath that antenna, you'd receive just about no signal from it. So with the signal strength going up and down, the frequency, musical pitch all over the place, and then stepping 6.5 second rate between each one, pretty useless. So that spinning had to be slowed down somehow. So there was a necessity, but on top of that, we were keen to experiment with a permanent magnet system to stabilise the satellite, because it seemed to us that compared to the other systems in use, this ought to be simpler and more effective. And also, in the spirit of the times and our youth, some of us were 18. So the old blokes were 22. There you go. We just wanted to give it a go. What did we do? Magnetic attitude stabilisation system, we called it. So was a collection of lossy magnetic rods, hysteresis rods, to those of you who know about magnetic hysteresis. That's just a complicated way of saying that they were to reduce the satellite spin by wasting its energy through a magnetic process. But they didn't in themselves necessarily exert much force to line up with the Earth's magnetic field. In fact, they could, but not as much as a very strong bar magnet to follow the Earth's field. So looking at this picture, you just see the end of a magnet poking out there through the in between all the electronics. Great big battery pack in the middle was that dominated the weight and the whole mechanical spin properties of the satellite. So it sounds very simple. It was. But as far as we knew, the method hadn't been used before, not exactly in this form. But for something so simple, why did even we agonise and argue about its operation? We probably thought that if it was likely to work as well as we were hoping, it would have been commonplace already. From the technical point of view, there is a potential conflict between the operation of the rods and the magnet. We believed that was manageable. Very little written information was available, and even then, its relevance to a small satellite like this was in question. The lossy rods had been used in earlier and much more elaborate satellites. Even the first generation of military navigation satellites launched in 1960, but they didn't have the permanent magnet. Apart from our school physics, two astrophysics textbooks in the Bayleu Library were the total source of information. In case you don't believe I really mean that, in 1966 there was no internet, no means of sending instant messages to possibly helpful experts across the world, even if we'd known of any. We were on our own. One of those two books gave the magnet a brief mention, but in almost hypothetical terms. The other text complicated the idea by implying that reducing the spin energy, which is what the hysteresis rods would do, would be a little help without something else to remove the angular momentum. Now, this is getting a little bit technical, but the methods that were suggested were much more complex than we could provide. Things like, called in the trade, mass ejection, yo-yos, thrust rockets or reaction wheels, sort of gyroscopic arrangements had to be driven, far more complex. Now, I've been told to keep this simple, but have to explain what the angular momentum is all about. If you think you don't know about angular momentum or moments of inertia, if you've seen high board divers and ballet dancers, gymnasts or spinning tops in action, then you've seen angular momentum at work. Fortunately, our satellite wasn't expected to have much of it, but still it had to be reduced. Well, again, for something so simple, was there any reason to expect it was going to be difficult? Think of the spinning ballet dancer on tiptoes. If the toes move to, or the feet move from tiptoe stance to flat on the ground, the spinning stops, of course. By friction or grip or traction, whichever way you want to think of it, most of the dancer's angular momentum is transferred to the Earth. Of course, the Earth doesn't notice a thing. We were being told that it's all different for satellites because there is no friction in space, so that sort of thing just can't happen. Well, of course, it's true that a satellite can't work the same way as feet on the ground, but is there any doubt that a similar momentum exchange can happen through the Earth's magnetic field? Magnetic compasses have been around for thousands of years. A magnetic compass needle wouldn't work without some angular momentum. A newer and more convincing example is the maglev train. It was patented in 1913, by the way. But clearly, momentum transfer is involved in those processes by magnetic means. Well, how did our system compare with the hysteresis rods used in the early navigation satellites in 1960? Well, the lossy rods they used were quite effective and stabilised the satellite after about a month. That was a more massive satellite. But we believed that with a powerful magnet as well, the result should be much better. Think of iron filings strewn around a magnet on a sheet of paper. Magnetic materials like that can also become magnetised and probably know they line themselves up with the magnetic field. But we reckon that the permanent magnet would be far more effective. Now, we were expecting a battery life of only a matter of months, so we wanted to remove the spin as quickly as possible. So you'll notice that the magnet is along the maximum dimension of the satellite. All the other materials there were stainless steel and aluminium, so they weren't going to interfere with the magnet's effect. So if it all worked and the satellite long axis was lined up with the Earth's field, then if we're in orbit, magnet along this direction following the Earth's field. Calculations were that we could follow the Earth's magnetic field within, I think it was 18 degrees. I have the old handwritten calculations. Still be a bit of rotation. We could afford that. Fairly slow rotation was tolerable. If you think of the Earth's field coming from a bar magnet, that bar magnet is relatively small compared to the diameter of the Earth. So if the magnet is horizontal over the Earth's surface at the equator, then as we head towards a pole, the satellite is dipping over compared to the Earth's surface. Even by the time we reach the latitude of Melbourne, we're pointing down at about 68 degrees to the vertical. Of course, it has to reach vertical by the time it's crossing near the pole. The satellite orbit didn't go right over the pole, but pretty close. So it's in terms of being able to follow the Earth's magnetic field at a speed, it's a pretty slow process. So that in itself wasn't a major problem. The permalloy wire had to be imported at some expense, and it needed heat treatment in a hydrogen atmosphere. That was done for us as a very valuable favour. We had to make up some apparatus to measure the loss in its hysteresis loop to work out the energy loss per revolution in order to calculate the contribution of that energy loss to the reduction of spin and so on. In contrast, the magnet was made for us in Noble Park by the dear old roller company. It cost us no more than driving out there to ask for the strongest one that would fit in the box. Well, how well did it work? As we'd expected, the satellite spin in the first few orbits made the telemetry decoding very difficult. But at about 15 seconds per revolution of the box, it was a good deal less than we'd feared it might have been. So the balance of the two springs was pretty good. But after only about 7 or 8 days, I think, the spin had slowed down to almost 20 minutes per rotation. And that was a pretty successful result. Very similar arrangements have been used on many small satellites since, and detail analyses are easy to find on the web. If you search for PMAS, P-M-A-S, that's passive magnetic attitude stabilisation, there are plenty of them there. I doubt any would mention us, but we did it a long time ago. Whether it was just our ignorance at the time, consequent on lack of information of the state of the art then, or Antipodean sentimentality enriched over time now, we believe it was the first of its kind, and it worked.
Thanks, Steve.